All right. Here we go again. The foreword. Paper zero. Section 9. Old single column, page 12. And before we get started, so it's definitely official now. I've got some sort of issue with the numbers 7 and 12. What the heck is up with this? So you remember, a few weeks ago, I wanted to say that 12 divisions of the Master Seraphim, and, I said 7 for some unknown reason. And no one corrected me. Well, I got home last week and I was like, now wait a minute. So I went and listened, sure enough. Okay, so at the end of the study group last week, I did it in reverse. I wanted to say the 7 levels of the Absinthe, and what did I say? The 12 levels of the Absinthe. I don't know what the heck is going on with my brain. So apparently when I get excited that the 7s and 12s flip. So you're going to have to really watch me on that one. I don't know what the heck is up with that. I'll try really hard to... Yeah, try to zero in on the numbers 7 and 12 here from now on. Anyway, so yes, a little errata there from last week. Minor detail, but yes, there are 4 levels of the ultimate, hence the 4 outer space levels, and there's 7 levels of the Absinthe. Yeah, remember there's 7 different groups of master architects that match up with that. Okay, so anyway, so that with that little preface to the Absinthe and the Ultimate, we're ready to do the God the Ultimate section here. Let's see, is there any, I don't think there is really any preface needed. Just as we start to read this first paragraph, put yourself in the mode of remember as much as you can about what you know about the Supreme, and then, they're going to immediately try to challenge you to take it to the next notch and think of that which transcends the Supreme, and in what ways is it parallel, and in what ways is it, is it a little bit more than what you would call transcendent, it's really quite distinct from the finite and the Supreme. All right, so let's jump in here.
Section 9, God the Ultimate. Just as the Supreme Being progressively evolves from the antecedent divinity endowment of the encompassed grand universe potential of energy and personality, so does God the Ultimate eventuate from the potentials of divinity residing in the transcended time-space domains of the Master Universe. The actualization of ultimate deity signalizes Absinthe unification of the first experiential trinity and signifies unifying deity expansion on the second level of creative self-realization. This constitutes the personality power equivalent of the universe experiential deity actualization of paradise Absinthe realities on the eventuating levels of transcended time-space values. The completion of such an experiential unfoldment is designed to afford ultimate service destiny for all time-space creatures who have attained Absinthe levels through the completed realization of the Supreme Being and by the ministry of God the Sevenfold.
All right. As you can tell from that paragraph, they're being very condensed, and creating a little section up here in the foreword about God the Ultimate. So besides going through and parsing it a little bit just to, slow it down a bit so you can unpack it a little bit and reflect on it, there's a lot of things that if we look at it more closely will strengthen what we've done in building an understanding of the Supreme. Like I said, that's very much what they're attempting to do, to draw upon that. Now, obviously not as a new reader, you know, if you're starting here, but, you know, if you've gone around at least once and you're coming back here, having gone through the Supreme Papers, what might the reader now have a grip on, and they could build upon that. Okay, so let's just take a little step at a time here. So in that first sentence, antecedent divinity endowment. Okay, we know that one of the fundamental things we brought up all the time when we were talking about the Supreme is that you have this bidirectional flow. You have an aspect that's being drawn up from the potentials into actualization, into actuality, an actualization. And then you have this downreach coming down, which is that focalizing, coordinating hand, and the mother, as opposed to the Almighty, that's welling up. So if it's going to be coming down from above, if you're just thinking in a simple time viewpoint, you're thinking of that which is above of the absonite as what's going to follow the finite. But obviously, if something's going to come down from up there, it had to have been there before there was a finite. It's antecedent, and that's the core truth of the mother, that the mother is coming down from the Trinity, and the Trinity was there before anything was. And so think about just a little bit more about this issue of, when they say that you have this grand universe potential of energy and personality. So you have these potentials being drawn up. We know that they're not instantly perfect. They're perfecting. And just from a cold factual perspective, it's imperfect. So divinity, what do they mean? I mean, where does that word fit? How do you understand the relationship of the word divinity to what you know is not, what's welling up is not instantly divine. What's coming down from above is divine. The individuality of the whole, is divine. It has that relationship to the whole. Remember, divinity is deity likeness. So that facet that's coming down, that deity that's coming down, is very much has this definitive deity likeness. So when you go way up there in the in the ordination paper, up in paper 140, and you read that little passage that I often refer to about the circumstances of life are a divine dispensation. Right now is a divine dispensation. Why? Is it because, all of the things and beings are perfect all around you? The circumstances? No. It's because of her, the divinity that she is, that permeates all things. There is a divinity there, in spite of the fact that the parts haven't all been brought together into completeness. Okay,
active and present time.
Right. She brings divinity into it. So the more that you can recognize the fact of her immanence, the more you will see the divinity of now, the more you will know the truth that it's a perfecting domain and not an imperfect domain. Okay? She's the key. Okay? And so that, the word mother is not there, but we know we have these two facets, Almighty and Mother, and they're talking about something, antecedent divinity. Give it a name. You know what that is. That's the Mother. Okay? And so when they say, from the antecedent divinity endowment of the encompassed, okay, encompassed is another one of those key words. Okay, that's That's we're not talking about the Universal Mother. We're not talking about the Almighty Supreme. We're talking about the Supreme Mind, you know, that encompasses, you know, the Supreme Being, or, you know, as the Supreme Mind, as an absolute individual, and hence encompasses supremacy. You know, that's that word encompass invokes that. So you have the Mother, and then the Supreme Mind, and then when you get to the potential of energy and personality, okay, well, there we're talking about the Almighty, that upwelling part. So all three are there, just in that first sentence. Okay, and universe potential of energy and personality. Ooh, well, you know, they're already. We just read the sevenfold. You know, at the bottom of the sevenfold controllers is the things, and at the bottom of the sevenfold creators is the beings, things and beings, energy and personality. See, they're invoking the two aspects of the sevenfold. That kind of recognition is what you want going on. You know, don't just take it at mere face value. Recognize what they're referring to, you know, as you pass through. So they invoke the Mother, the Supreme Mind, the Almighty, and the Sevenfold, all in that first sentence. And none of those are in black and white in that first sentence. But you can recognize that. So they're saying, okay, take all that you know about the finite. And now, you know, stretch that understanding to a transcendent domain. So does God the ultimate. You know, not evolve now, but eventuate. From the potentials of divinity again, see, because there's the absonite upholder, there's the Mother in the absonite domain as well. So the potentials of divinity residing in the transcended time-space domains of the Master Universe. Oh, and they used Grand Universe and Master Universe here too. The word universe, that one turning, in other words, there's a wholeness to it. It's a womb. You have this hierarchy of wombs. You have the Grand Universe with the finite upholder, and you have the Master Universe with the absonite upholder, the Mother at the two levels. And think about that a little more carefully. This tendency that a new reader always has to, again, think in a very time viewpoint where, okay, so you have the finite stuff all happening in the Grand Universe, and you're going to get the Grand Universe settled in light and life, and then there's going to be absonite stuff out in the outer space levels. Okay, so you're thinking really sequentially like that. Yeah. Well, the Master Universe is not just the four outer space levels. Master Universe is the four outer space levels and the Grand Universe. Okay. That whole domain, including where you're standing, is within the womb of the Mother at the absonite level. Or in other words, there are absonite things happening right here, right now. It's not like the absonite womb, you know, is a donut that goes around the outside of us, okay? We're within it. It's just, it is above the level that we're currently conscious, but we're still within it. Okay. So all that, see, I mean, if you just thought carefully about that, you know, that statement, you, as a brand new reader, you wouldn't get off on that mode where you started really creating this too simplistic a viewpoint of, you know, the relationship of the outer space levels to the absonite. Was there a question, a hand somewhere?
Well, I had a hand.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. So, you know, just there's obviously going to be some kind of parallel to all that going on when you're talking about God the ultimate instead of God the supreme. And then they throw in, okay, now the actualization of ultimate deity signalizes absolute unification of the first experiential trinity. In other words, we know we have that first experiential trinity, the ultimate trinity, that from an individuality viewpoint, you know, you speak of it as the supreme creators, the Supreme Being and the architects of the Master Universe, making that ultimate Trinity. But of course, the super additive consequence of the relationship of all that individual deity is one deity, the ultimate Trinity. Yeah. It's not just an association, it's an organic separate fact. And it's through that organic separate fact, that absonite fact, through that absonite fact, that you actualize, see, the actualization of ultimate deity, that you're going to actualize God the ultimate. It's via that fact. You're not going to do it without that substrate laid down, say, however you want to think about that. It's a fundamental part of what's going on at that next level is, kind of think of you're building up from the bottom and you get up to this first plateau of supremacy, and then you're going to do some more, and you need a sort of a new foundation upon which you're going to do all the way, that's why I said via, that ultimate Trinity. You kind of think of that ultimate Trinity as this new ubiquitous pretext for everything that's going to happen in terms of being able to actualize ultimate deity. Okay. And then what else do we notice in there? All these subtle little things. Okay. And it signifies unifying deity expansion on the second level of creative self-realization. You have just parallel to the whole expansion of the finite that's being upheld by the finite upholder, you have that expansion that's being upheld by the absonite upholder. That deity expansion. Think of that as an expanding phenomenon. That you're finally gonna. It's gonna grow to the final fullness of the absonite capacity, and then God the ultimate is complete. So this sort of expansion to achieve the final fullness of the absonite capacity, just like the grand universe being settled in light and life, was actualizing potentials until you had expanded to the fullness of the finite capacity. Everything has a parallel. They're kind of just trying to invoke that parallel image. Okay. Notice what they do in the next sentence. This constitutes the personality power. Is that the way they normally make that hyphenated word? No. This is the only time they do it. It's always like power personality synthesis, and they're talking about the Supreme Being. So just notice what they're trying to, that just that subtle way, they're thinking, well, don't get too simplistic about this. Don't just take the Almighty and the Mother up in a very simple parallel fashion. They're kind of suggesting there, if anything, maybe a first tack would be, instead of thinking power personality, where, which is the normal thing, like we're talking about the Supreme Being, where, which is the root word. If you say power personality, right, that's the root. So you're tacking power on to personality here it's an addition on to personality here for what's happening with the Supreme. They're saying, if anything, maybe kind of think of it in a sort of a reciprocal fashion. Because think about where you're heading. You're heading towards what we talked about some, where you're going to reach levels where power, where energy pattern, purposed energy, is going to become harder and harder to distinguish from spirit pattern, purposed spirit, personality. You can kind of think of it, it's like, well, in a sense, you can think of it as adding personality to power instead of adding power to personality. You're going, whoa, that's a weird thing to think of. But obviously power in a very transcendent way. See, so there's all kinds of subtle little things like that they throw in. So it constitutes the personality power equivalent of the universe experiential deity actualization of paradise absonite realities on the eventuating levels of transcended time-space values. Okay, so you're, again, they're telling you in the same way that you could begin to really understand down here with this bidirectional flow, you know, definitely start with that when you go to the ultimate level. You know, they use the divinity already again. And, you know, they're saying you have this paradise absonite realities. You have something that's coming down from the absolute level in the same way. Because you have the infinite upholder, the absolute upholder, the absolute upholder. You still have that. You know, that hasn't changed. That's a very definitive downwelling, you know, phenomenon. So it's just that it's all going to happen in some transcended time-space way, which, you know, we really can't directly contemplate. But okay, the completion of such an experiential unfoldment is designed to afford ultimate service destiny for all time-space creatures who have attained absonite levels through the completed realization of the Supreme Being and by the ministry of God the Sevenfold. Okay, so, you know, this whole service destiny thing is going to still be in play. It's just the destiny point now is, you know, is gone to the next level up from where it is right now. Your immediate destiny point right now is the Supreme Being. But when you get to that destiny point, see how they word that? Through the completed realization of the Supreme Being. You know, the Supreme Being is the bridge. We talked about this one time. Thinking of that Supreme Being as this bridge from where you are now to where you'll be in that next age. You know, that the Supreme Being is standing on the interface between the two domains and has a hand that can reach both directions from the interface. And that hand can reach down and bring you up. So through him, you know, you can be brought to the absonite side from the finite side through the completed realization of the Supreme Being. And that whole process was facilitated, you know, and you getting up to the point where you could reach out your hand and the Supreme Being could grab it, you know, you needed some sort of a stairway to that heaven. Yeah, you needed God the Sevenfold.
I think Led Zeppelin
said that. Yeah, yeah, right. You needed that staircase of God the Sevenfold. You know, so that's why they're invoking that. You just think you've got this whole staircase that's been set up in the finite, to lift you up off the you know the bottom level. You walk up the staircase and you get up, and then you're pulled up by the Supreme Being and put on that new, substrate of the ultimate Trinity, and then we start again. Yeah, so that's sort of, you know, see, to unpack that a little bit more. Okay, here, let's do here first.
The term service destiny seems a little uninspiring to me. It's sort of, I feel a little bit like a worker bee in training.
Yeah,
you know, there are other things I'd like to do, quite honestly, besides just being constant.
And that's why there are mansion worlds. All the tension that you feel about yourself relative to a term like service destiny is resolved between here and Gerasim. That's the point. It's not like the universe is somehow demanding that you magically deny the fact of your childlike starting point self. And all of, you know, it starts with nothing but incessant clamoring. Me, 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 me. Really struggles with, you know, other, and especially thinking of itself as other, thinking of itself as something very transcendent of what it is right now. Something that, you know, is going to say, oh, you know, I don't have any needs. I don't have any desires. You know, not my will, but your will be done. That's a big step, okay? And you, no one, you know, is expected to be doing that in some simple little magical way in one little brief life on a mortal sphere. So you have the imagined world so that you have this long extended domain where you can slowly grow into that. You can satiate all those initial needs of self, not as an end in itself, because of course the more you go on, the more, you know, you transform that selfishness into a recognition of you can't get to eternity without a self. It's not like I want to somehow deny myself. I just want to make myself something that'll keep me going here for more than, you know, the few brief years on my mortal sphere. And the more you think more long term about this, you know, self, the more, you know, this selfish thinking about the self, the less selfish it actually is, see. Because the moment you start thinking more and more long term about the self, the less you're actually thinking about the animal self that exists just in the moment and is incessantly clamoring. You know, you're just automatically supplying the favorable conditions that self will be grown, and that self will just naturally start to think about itself differently once it grows.
The example that comes to my mind all the time is let's just say I'm a frustrated concert pianist.
Yeah.
And my career in that got sidelined over this other thing. And I've spent a lifetime yearning to go back to that and imagine that what I would really love to be in the fullness of eternity is a musician.
Mm-hmm.
But service destiny makes me feel like they're going to divert me again. I'm going to be over here counseling with some troubled being. That...
No. I mean, once you're a finaliter, yeah. Okay. But definitely... But definitely not, you know, between here and Jerusalem. I mean, between here and Jerusalem is still, you know, about you. I mean, you have to be something that can actually go out there. I mean, like when you think about what happens on the constellation level with all that socialization. Okay, why don't they just immediately do that stuff? Well, the kind of teachable that you need to be to teach what you're going to learn on the constellation levels does not exist right now. You do not have that kind of teachable mind. You're going, huh? Yeah, I mean, the kind of things you'd be doing that you can't even comprehend. It's beyond any imagination of what you could learn right now. You know, never mind that the selfishness is like, you know, well, maybe I'll let you teach me, but I've got an agenda. You know, there's that tension, of course. But, you know, just the service destiny thing, you know, especially putting the word destiny, so, you know, looming onto the word service, making it so daunting. You know, the root word nonetheless. And just don't worry about that right up front. I mean, that's not something that you have to confront right now. Enter the kingdom as a little child, you know, just like Jesus said. You know, don't worry about it. All that stuff will come in due time, and you will choose it wholeheartedly. That's the whole point. You're never going to be doing something against your will. You can't be drugged to eternity. You have to choose eternity. You know, we have that notion that, you know, well, I can be forced to do all kinds of things here. Well, yeah, that's going to go away real quick. Okay. I mean, you know, you get there and it's, you know, they're going to look at it and it's like, you know, you need to choose. And you're, well, I don't want to lay in my back here. You'll feed me. I know you will. Cause you're very, you know, you'll pity. I have pity on me and you'll feed me. Like, no, he who will not work shall not eat. You know, you have to confront some reality up there. And
isn't there some way, like maybe playing the piano could be a service?
Okay, yes. Well, okay, and that's what I was just going to bring up, finally to bring it all back to you. I mean, you know that you're going to be able to play something much cooler than a piano. I mean, read the Celestial Artisan's paper. You'll be able to produce music you can't even imagine right now. Music that would make the world weep, you know, if it could be played on this planet right now.
And you have to sign up for at least one millennium when you do it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's, right. I mean, everything that you can even remotely imagine of you having an ability that was, you know, kind of there at the beginning and never had the chance to be actualized or realized. I mean, that's all going to have, you know, replete opportunity. When you've got 7 additional lives, you know, to live.
Right.
Yeah.
Chris, I was thinking recently that about the self business, that I wonder if maybe we have to work on mastery of self and reach a kind of fulfillment of self before we can give it up, or before
Before there can be something that isn't,
move on to something more.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. You're not going to leave Gerasim until what you're saying is done. I mean, that's the whole point. Between here and Gerasim, you're going to complete that initial mastery of self, so that it's satiated. It's a solid foundation. It doesn't feel this empty hole in it anywhere that is desperately longing to be filled. You'll have filled all the holes. It's like, now I feel like I'm ready to take on something else. But right now I have my hands full with all the holes that I feel within me. I have this deep emptiness, you know, since I was 8 years old. I feel that I really, really should have been a concert pianist. That's really what my ability, God-given ability, was. I've trained, you know, a bunch of other skills into me, and I've, you know, managed to keep my belly full and a roof over my head for this life, but I still have this deep emptiness, you know, that's tied to my, you know, abilities. You know, so, you know, that's what it's for. That's what those mansion worlds are for. I mean, it's one of the most magnificent aspects of the fifth epical revelation, that all of those things have been given not only complete but replete places to be achieved. That's what those are for. You're not going to, you know, immediately be dropped into some grunge grind. I mean, eventually there is going to be a lot of you know, think about, you know, they say things like, you know, you're likely to be some sort of incredibly transcendent administrator out in the outer space levels. And you're going, oh my gosh, you know, I can't even manage to keep up with the 5 employees I have in my business. And I'm going to control, you know, a countless trillions of worlds, you know, with all these incessantly clamoring selves. You know, but you'll be able to take that on, no problem. You know, you'll be there. Now, we're not even close. I mean, now that's just, you know, that's why when people first discover the book and read those passages, they're going, really? That's what they think eternity, you know, the eternity I'm looking for? I'm not looking for that eternity. Yeah, well, that just shows you how far from eternity you are. Because that is actually, you know, what lies, you know, down the road, you know, even beginning as a finaliter once you leave paradise. So, you know, just, you know, turn it around. Instead of thinking, wow, this revelation is really disappointing, go, what they're trying to tell me is I'm not as far along as I thought I was. That I have a really, really long way to go before that will even remotely sound interesting to me. And if they tell me that will be transcendently interesting to me at some point, that's how much work I've got to do, you know, yet. So just take a deep breath and start, you know, on this little process.
Yeah, don't worry about the ultimate service destiny right now.
All right. I mean, don't even worry about the constellation service destiny right now, you know? Just, you know, don't worry about tomorrow. Today has enough problems of its own. You know, a famous person said as much. All right, so God the ultimate. So you know they're wanting you to bring in a little bit more of the definitive top-down viewpoint. You know, that's the unity viewpoint designation. Well, what do they say?
God the ultimate is designative of personal deity functioning on the divinity levels of the absonite and on the universe spheres of super time and transcended space. The ultimate is a super supreme eventuation of deity. The supreme is the Trinity unification, comprehended by finite beings. The ultimate is the unification of the Paradise Trinity, comprehended by absonite beings.
Sure enough, see, all of a sudden now they're talking about the Paradise Trinity. See, and that shouldn't be surprising to you. You know, you would expect to run across some discussion of the Paradise Trinity the moment they invoke, you know, that definitive unity viewpoint designation of God the ultimate. And so look at how they stress it again. It's designated of personal deity. You know, that personal purposive component, the mother, there in the absonite, still definitively there, functioning on the divinity levels again, you know, bringing deity likeness into all those eventuating levels of the absonite, in spite of their lack of completeness. There's a divinity through it nonetheless. They're just trying to get you to see, you know, you can understand this. This is not that complicated. Just take everything up a notch. You know, it's just on something that's a little hard to quite imagine, you know, some sort of transcended sense of sequence, some super time and transcended space. But nonetheless, there are spheres. And you might notice the what is the tense of this sentence? Is it God the ultimate will be designative?
Is.
Yeah, I pointed this out before. So this universe spheres of super time and transcendent space are. You know, again, to stop thinking in such simple time viewpoint terms, but to recognize that this whole phenomenon is in existence. These absonite spheres are completely inaccessible to you. They're not, hiding behind Jupiter or something. They're not in finite space and time, but they are there. To really let go of that time, and in a sense, see, you already are an administrator. You know, but then, of course, that just really kind of screws you up. It's like, well, then do I have free will? There's no way for us to think about that, directly. But that's what they're trying to get you to recognize.
So the Paradise Trinity then would be an undivided deity?
Paradise Trinity is undivided deity when you talk about it from the top-down viewpoint. Where you think of, some collection of deity together, and then you separate out, you divide out that which you can, like the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, and the Infinite Spirit, and the part that's undivided, undividable, unindividuatable, is the Paradise Trinity. That's the top-down viewpoint, see, of the Paradise Trinity, where you see it as antecedent, very first sentence we read tonight. Where you see it as antecedent of the individuality rather than as a superadditive consequence of the individuality getting their ducks all in a row and getting together and doing something together. Okay, that bottom-up viewpoint. We don't want to go into, exactly how the Master Spirit specifically fit into this, but we're speaking of the same thing. This, where does this personal deity functioning come from, that they just said at the beginning? God the ultimate is designative personal deity functioning. That's the mother. That's coming down from the Trinity. The root of that that deity phenomenon that we call the mother is the Paradise Trinity, just as the root of the deity phenomenon that we call the Father is the other side of that which is the Paradise Trinity. It's the first center. You have one original with two sides. From one side comes the Father, and from one side, other side comes the Mother. Okay? And so, they're just pointing out, see, the Supreme is the Trinity unification. not the synthesis, you know, or summation. Those are more almighty like words. Unification, you know, that unifying part of what's going to eventually be the Supreme Being, that's now what we call the Universal Mother, she came down from the Paradise Trinity. That, and the same is true when you go a notch up, obviously. You know? The ultimate, see, as the Mother, is the unification of the Paradise Trinity comprehended by Absinthe beings. That is the Mother that they comprehend up there. The ultimate as the Mother. Down here it's the Supreme as the Mother. You know, or from, if you speak of it in individuality terms, we call her the Universal Mother, the womb of the grand universe. But there's a womb of the Master Universe as well. So, I mean, all the terms are just completely parallel. You know, so all you have, you know, it's just, you know, putting in things like the ultimate is a super supreme eventuation. They're just giving you, basically, they're just giving you a lot of the terms so that you can start to definitively talk about this. You know, that if I have a supreme, then I can have a super supreme. If I have time, I can have super time. If I, you know, if I have creatures, I can have super creatures. You know, they're just trying to introduce, remember, this is trying to just introduce a lot of the nomenclature, put it in a solid little context so that you can start to talk about this in definitive ways. Okay? Yeah.
What's the significance, the Supreme, they say, Trinity unification, the ultimate unification of the Paradise Trinity? So,
There's a lot of times they don't, when it's obvious which Trinity you're talking about, that you're talking about the Paradise Trinity, they'll just say the Trinity. You know, even in a name like the Trinity of Supremacy, you know, that isn't the Paradise Trinity of Supremacy. you know, it's, you're supposed to recognize that. I mean, so it's the Paradise Trinity, both of them. Okay.
It is.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because, like I said, there's one root for the Mother. The root of the Absinthe upholder, you know, is the Paradise Trinity. The root of the absolute? The root of the absolute upholder is the Paradise Trinity. The root of the Absinthe upholder is the Paradise Trinity. The root of the finite upholder is the Paradise Trinity. It's all the Mother. You know, that's the thing. You know, in the same way that you can call all of those, you know, let's bring it up here. We keep doing this thing in the air. Let's just bring out the chart. In the same way that that this whole circuit is the circuit of the Father. You know, I could erase all the lines and just write the Father all the way around that ellipse. Okay, erase all the words and all the lines. Okay, but you know, we now recognize that the Father is not a monolithic fact. The Father has facets. You know, and they have an order to them. It's the same way with the Mother. The Mother is not a monolithic fact. The Mother has facets. And it's a different kind of facets than with the Father. You know, the facets of the Father, you think of, you know, especially, you know, just, you know, talk about the Father, not the Father, say, engaging us via the sevenfold or something like that. But just talking about the Father, you know, you're thinking up at really the absolute infinite sort of a level. You know, you're thinking way up high, and you know, and sort of all those facets are up there, you know, as an initiator phenomenon for everything. But the facets of the Mother, rather than sort of being all up there, are hierarchical, very definitively. Think about her facets, you know, as having this very definitive vertical relationship to you. Okay, it's all the Mother, you know. There's nothing lacking about the motherness of the finite upholder, of the Universal Mother. It's like, oh, if only we had a, you know, a more complete Mother, you know, like the Absinthe beings do. No, she's complete. You know, there are no holes in her motherness. She's a complete Mother for the finite. So It's just as, you know, in the same way that all those facets of the Father, it's not like one of them is really more Father-like than the others, really. You know, I mean, they're all the Father, just as definitively. Same way with the Mother. It's just you've got to allow the hierarchicalness. And they're, if you think about it, we already kind of spoke to that, that now is a divine dispensation, that divinity. See? I mean, it's not like the divinity at this level is not as good as the divinity at this level. No, it's all divinity. But it's hierarchical. You have to recognize that. You know, there's deity likeness has a hierarchical character, but it's nonetheless deity. Now is just as divine a dispensation as the now a million years from now. And to be able to see that, to be able to start seeing that, that equal divinity now as what you can, your spiritual consciousness could can imagine in the future, that will transform your entire life. If you can do that one thing, if you can become the master of your spiritual consciousness in that one fundamental way, to stop letting it devalue now because it has this foresight into the far future. You have to tell it, no, you need to open the other eye and you need to reflect on this a little bit more. Now is just as divine a dispensation as then. You know, and if you can live that truth, now you are living truth. Rather than false fact picture things. You know, that's why I so stress that the abomination of thinking of this as an imperfect domain. There's just nothing more destructive of your sense of worth than to think that. Because the only reason that you have value is because you're perfecting, because of your potential. It's not because of your actuality. Because no matter how much you grow, if you subtract it from infinity, it's negligible. Okay, you don't have value because of what you are, no matter how big you are. Because it's always negligible relative to infinity. You know, where value really comes from, the fact that there's an infinity. So you have to fundamentally make that transformation. If you can turn that around, then you'll be born again. You know, then everything will start to become new. Your life will begin to not be a soap opera. You'll get along better with other people. You know, you'll do better at your job. Everything will transform if you can start to function as part of the web of divinity of the Mother.
You know, when you take a journey, the first step is just as transcendently important as the last step.
Yeah.
You know, it just because I'm not much now doesn't mean the step that I take is not just as.
Because no second step is possible without a first step. So which is more valuable? They're both equally valuable.
You made the most important step. You made a choice to take that.
You know, and the only thing that you can't do is have the potential to take a first step. And that's why there's a Father that initiates you so that you can take a first step. But he's not going to, you know, reach down and grab your legs and make you walk. Okay, you have to choose to take a first step and a second step and a third step. Okay, and in order to walk, you have to be able to, there has to be something to stand on. You have to have a relationship with the upholder, you know? Again, a step is not possible if there's no place to stand. You know? So someone has to give you the ability to take steps, the Father, and someone has to give you a place to stand, the Mother.
On your eternal lifts,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to get off too much, but you have the eternal Son, the infinite Spirit, and this, and it all goes around like this in a paradise aisle. But how come the universal Father wouldn't be up here?
Again, remember what you've kind of done. You've taken a vertical list of seven levels, and you've wrapped them around. So now, in the sense that, you know, when you made that vertical list at the beginning of the foreword, that you called this one number one and this one number seven, there was some hierarchical character there. So that's still in there. The top domain is still, you know, the first domain, first functional level. Okay. And so there is still that order, you know, that goes around. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, just like it's numbered down in the middle of the chart there. That's still there. But if you put it wrapped around like that, and you fill in all the other things that are on that chart, you not only have, well, I have that sequence, but I have even more than that. Now I have more than a sequence. I also have the wholeness of it all, how these all fit together. And I see that I don't just have a sequence of the Father. I don't just have a sequence of individuality. I also have a sequence of unity and a sequence of the Mother. And simultaneously a sequence of the functioning of the Trinity. So you're just filling out the whole picture. I actually have four sequences, and there's a truth to putting it all into an ellipse, into a closed form instead of an open form like a vertical column, and seeing it all together, especially being able to have seven connect back to one. And we'll actually talk about that a little bit when we get forward here. Okay, so let's read some more.
The Universal Father, through the mechanism of evolutionary deity, is actually engaged in the stupendous and amazing act of personality focalization and power mobilization on their respective universe meaning levels of the divine reality values of the infinite, the absonite, and even the absolute.
Okay. These tiny little paragraphs here. Okay, so the Universal Father, through the mechanism of evolutionary deity, okay, is actually engaged in this stupendous and amazing act. Why did they italicize act there? Now, first of all, okay, you notice there's this focalization, that's the Mother. So again, that's the top-down flow, power mobilization, that's the bottom-up flow. So they're saying he initiated this flow. So he must have initiated both the top-down and the bottom-up components of it. How exactly do we, have we begun to understand that he initiates that bidirectional flow? And how do we start to talk about that bidirectional flow? Remember when we first brought out this, the chart here of thinking about the sevenfold. It's like, oh yeah, yeah. There he is at the top of each of those. That's a facet of the Father, the Universal Father. And that's a facet of the Father, the Universal Controller. And that's a facet of the Father, the Infinite Upholder. And so the initiator is initiating all three columns. Okay. So, but is that, is that a direct creative act? No. Is it through the mechanism of evolutionary deity? So you've got that evolutionary deity that's begun to actualize. And you know from how we've talked about it that the sevenfold is very integral in understanding how this the Almighty Supreme is coming into existence, and how you have this hierarchy of Mother coming down in the finite, all the various levels of the finite. So when they say act, it's like, well, are we talking about, like Pam kind of brought up, the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, and the Infinite Spirit, the God of action. Are we talking about really, the thought, the word, and the action? Are we really talking about that kind of acting? Well, it's like, well, no, it's much more complicated than that. It's this, it's this whole sevenfold thing. It's not just the three of them doing this triangular action phenomenon. Okay, so they're saying, okay, so it's not really the God of action. It's another kind of acting. Yeah, what did we call the God the Sevenfold? What's the name that we recognize that we should have, you know, at our disposal to use to talk about God the Sevenfold? The God of reaction. That reaction is an action. It's another type of action that the Father is involved in, you know, that he's initiated. That when you start to draw things and beings up out of the potentials, deity has to reach down in reaction to that, to engage it. You know, especially like we're talking about here, this downflow of mother, you know, of upholding, reaching down to engage that upwelling of things and beings. Okay? So you think another name for God the Sevenfold is the God of reaction. In parallel to the third source and center being the God of action. You know, the God of action, you know, is kind of behind getting the upwelling started. But then the God of reaction is reacting to that upwelling, reaching down to engage it. That staircase that we were talking about, it stair steps down to engage that upwelling. Okay, so that's, they've italicized the word act because they want you to, it's like, well, why on earth did they italicize act? I mean, they're trying to tell me something. They want you to spend a little time thinking about what kind of acting is going on here. It's not just that sort of simple direct acting that you talk about with the God of action. It's the God of reaction. Let's see, what else do we have there? In the same way that you have all the sevenfold of, you know, the divine reality values of the finite. Well, I mean, you have the absolute and the absolute too. There's going to be some sort of parallel to that in the absolute and the absolute as well. You know, we kind of talked about that. What becomes of God the sevenfold once you transcend the finite? I mean, who knows? But there still has to be some sort of reaction to all of this eventuating that's going to be welling up in the absonite age.
And that, you know, the God of action starts that welling up,
mm-hmm.
is what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And that's coming from a transcendent level. It's coming from an absolute level.
It's coming out of those absolute potentials.
Right, right.
But, right? I mean, it's the universal Father, you know, is not functioning at an infinite level there, but he's there. Okay. You know, down where the rubber meets the road. Okay, it's the supreme creators and the supreme controllers. You know, we're really immersed in. But behind, you know, above that, the supreme creators and the supreme controllers are those downreaching hands of the. Of that which comes from paradise. So, okay. All right.
Oh, I have a question.
Oh, another question?
Last week we read about power personalizing.
Mm-hmm.
Power personalized. Is this another way to say it? On personality focalization and power mobilization? Or is that something different?
Yeah. You have this, remember, you have the mother as that personal purposive aspect of what's going on, the personality focalization. And then you have the Almighty as that power pattern aspect of what's going on. This whole power mobilization, the summation that represents, so that you have the focalization and the summation. Yeah, yeah. So you're just imagining those two phenomena coming together as one, a power personality synthesis. Yeah. Yeah. The Mother and the Almighty come together as the supreme, and you have the supreme being. All right.
The first three and past eternal deities of paradise, the universal Father, the eternal Son, and the infinite Spirit, are in the eternal future to be personality complemented by the experiential actualization of associate evolutionary deities: God the Supreme, God the Ultimate, and possibly God the Absolute.
One thing that I didn't mention in the previous, and it's repeated here. Notice how they're talking about this. The Universal Father through the mechanism of evolutionary deity. And here you have it again. This experiential actualization of associate evolutionary deities. He's going, well, wait a minute. I thought evolution was about the finite. And eventuation is about the absonite. Here it looks like they're saying, well, carefully, you know, it is like that. So that, what does that mean about precisely what they're saying in these two little paragraphs? Why did we start holding up this chart about the sevenfold? And where is the sevenfold? The sevenfold is in the fifth level domain. You remember what the name of that domain, that level is? Evolutional. Right? So, you know, when you're talking about the Father initiating, you know, in this mode here, as they're speaking, you know, being the initiator of the sevenfold, the God, you know, God the sevenfold, the God of reaction, that's in the evolutional domain directly. And so it's in that mode that they're speaking, that when you're thinking in this time viewpoint, it all starts with an evolutional impulse, you know, that's pushing all of the finite, but then the finite is pushing the absonite. And see, so they're speaking in that mode, that of really thinking sequentially. God the Supreme leads to God the Ultimate, leads to God the Absolute, but it all begins that as an evolutional, you know, pushing. Okay, and so, you know, that's it's true to say that. It's not like that's an error, but you got to recognize, you know, why they're saying it that. What exactly are they trying to communicate in this passage? They aren't just trying to get you to think in very separate level terms. They're really trying to, you know, it starts out, the first words are the Universal Father, and they're bringing in the sevenfold, which they just introduced in the previous section, to this picture. How can you think of the sevenfold fitting into this relationship to God the Supreme, God the Ultimate, and God the Absolute? You can think of it as what's really down in the finite has a hold of the finite from that transcendent, you know, domain. You know, it doesn't really need a floor underneath it. It's self-floored. It's the sevenfold grabs it hierarchically, and then it's pushing the whole structure forward. This is the way they're visualizing it there. Okay. And we talked some already about the notion of past eternal and eternal future and those sorts of concepts. So that's pretty straightforward. But anyway, that sort of the real kind of little twist they threw in there is using evolutionary, when it seemed like they had been so firm about saying, you know, evolve, eventuate, and, you know, so take that up as a challenge. See, they're trying to, you know, not, they're trying to get you to not think too simplistically, too factually, you know, a little bit more truthfully about the relationship between all these various aspects.
God the Supreme and God the Ultimate, now evolving in the experiential universes, are not existential, not past eternals, only future eternals, time-space conditioned and transcendental conditioned eternals. They are deities of supreme, ultimate, and possibly supreme ultimate endowments, but they have experienced historic universe origins. They will never have an end, but they do have personality beginnings. They are indeed actualizations of eternal and infinite deity potentials, but they themselves are neither unqualifiedly eternal nor infinite.
Okay, just see it again right there at the beginning. God the Supreme, God the Ultimate, now evolving. You're going, evolving? Wait a minute, I thought that God the Ultimate was eventuating. I mean, didn't they, you know, actually say that, you know, directly? Yeah. So does God the ultimate eventuate? You know, that was in the first paragraph. Yeah.
It's like supremacy is a form of ultimacy that evolves.
Right. And think about how you can more directly appreciate that the truth of that statement if you include the sevenfold in your thinking about the whole picture. You know, they said that God the ultimate, right back there, that the actualization of ultimate deity signalizes absolute unification of the first experiential trinity. In other words, you know, we're going to get God the ultimate into existence via the ultimate trinity. Well, what's in the ultimate trinity? Well, one of the things that's in the ultimate trinity is the supreme creators. And the supreme creators are definitely evolutionary deity, you know, like, you know, let's take a creator son, you know, let's go all the way down to the very definitive, you know, evolutionary point in the sevenfold. A supreme creator, a creator son, you know, is one of those supreme creators. This evolutionary deity, this evolutionary being, you know, and as he's like going through his seven bestowals, that whole evolutionary process of growing through the seven bestowals. It's an evolutionary process, but it's eventuating in something. It's eventuating in him being a master son and having a little measure of absonite expression of actually being part of the ultimate trinity, which is how God the ultimate is actualizing via the ultimate trinity. So see, just connect all the dots. So his evolution drives up through that system and is, you know, is driving the eventuating of ultimate deity. Okay? But in terms of what, you know, you think of as really going on right now in time, it's evolving. The eventuating is in super time, you know, but you know, that's the mode they're speaking in. They're very purposely, and I'll see in all three of these paragraphs, putting in that evolutionary so that you are forced to put these four sections together. God the Supreme, God the Ultimate, God the Evidence, and God the Sevenfold. Okay? And not, because if you think about, you know, how you may have been relating to those four facts over the years, you might have had a tendency to really kind of think of the three together, the supreme, the ultimate, and the absolute, and then over here is the sevenfold. You know, it was kind of a disjoint thought. Okay, you know, we're very much trying to get all these things together into one picture. You know, I mean, the sevenfold is in a circuit, you know, the unity circuit, along with the supreme and the ultimate and the absolute, even the Son and the Spirit and the infinite. Okay, those have a togetherness in that circuit, and what they're doing there is this very subtle way of getting you to try to see if you can understand that more, how the sevenfold is part of that picture with those other three, in the same way that we were able to finally really appreciate how paper 119 wasn't some sort of a weird other paper with four supreme papers, that there's five experiential deity papers is what you actually have. It's a similar thing. You know, they're trying to get you to recognize more of the whole picture in very subtle ways.
I don't understand why you, why don't you have the universal father in this front?
That outer circuit?
Yeah.
Because that's not the circuit of the father.
But it is. The eternal Son, the infinite spirits, was the first three and past eternal deities of paradise.
Those are
the eternal Son. They put them all together.
The eternal Son and the infinite spirit are individuality names. Okay. Look at those third and fourth levels. Yeah, you have the spirit, and you have the infinite spirit. You even have the infinite mother spirit. Okay. You know, and you can you could combine that all together and say something like third source and center. But technically, you know, there's a part of that fact that's functioning in a different relationship in the whole. You know, there's a facet that's really in the mother, the circuit of the mother. There's a facet that's really in the unity circuit, and there's a facet that's in the individuality circuit. You don't really get to the point, like we talked about this. It's only when you finally get to deity and reality, and you're challenging to go beyond the seven absolutes of infinity, that they bring in this notion. It's like, well, you know, we've been talking about the universal Father in a very sort of equal-like terms to the eternal Son and the infinite Spirit. We've been talking about it in that seven absolutes of infinity mode. Well, there's a truth there, but you know, you can go beyond that. The actuality is that there's something called God the Father, which is the personalization of all of that deity. That's actually God the Father. And God the Father is much closer to unity than you would initially think if you stuck him out here on the individuality circuit. This is the unity circuit, and he's right next to it. That whole bit about him freeing himself from the fetters of unqualified infinity. There's unity, and here's the Father. And he has a unity likeness very fundamentally because of the closeness of that relationship. It's only in more of an abstract way to say, well, those facets of that unity of the Father, for me to start thinking about it a little bit better from my individuality viewpoint, I could conceptualize that facet called the universal Father is not a facet, but is an actual separate individual thing. I could use that concept to begin to understand it a little better, so that for instance, when I'm thinking about the sevenfold, I can go, well, this individual is one of the sevenfold creators. But this individual, the universal creator, is one of these individuals. Well, see, it just we're trying to recognize there's a little bit of a fuzziness there that you've injected, because actually the Father is not in the individuality circuit. He's not one of these individuals around that outside circuit. The Father has a circuit unto himself. Okay? The Father is very much one. Okay? And we talked about this. It's sort of, you know, you can kind of put him in that individuality circuit in the place of the supreme creators and the supreme controllers. You know? Just, you know, if you have the supreme creators and supreme controllers right here at the bottom of this, you know, instead of having, you know, thinking of them, well, think of the, you know, what's at the top of those two. And just conceptualize those being there instead. You know, the top instead of the bottom being there. You know, and then you could have seven absolutes of infinity around that outside circuit. That's the concept of the seven absolutes of infinity. Actually, there are these six absolutes of infinity. And the Father is a separate fact. Yeah, and that's suggested in times when they say, you know, well, there's the absolutes and then there's the absolute of absolutes. See, he's not just another one of the absolutes. He's the absolute of absolutes. So he can't just be another one along that line. Okay? If he was another one along this circuit, well, then where would the circuit have come from? It would have to just come into existence magically. Now, there has to be something behind the other absolutes, which means he can't actually be just quite like the other absolutes. He has to have a root that goes behind that. Okay. Right. So that all of that, see, is in play when you actually start to try to put it together in a better picture. I don't want to belabor this too much here, but the one little thing there, since they've introduced it, okay, we're talking about God the Supreme, God the Ultimate, God the Absolute. What the heck is Supreme Ultimate? If you're a new reader and you see that for the first time, you're wondering what the heck is Supreme Ultimate. And as you go on in the book, there's times when you have capital S and capital U, Supreme Ultimate, and so they're talking about deity, not just reality. And okay, so what's the deal there? We've been kind of talking in this time viewpoint, this sort of bottom up mode a lot here in these last three paragraphs. And if you think about it, it's like, well, okay, I've got the Supreme. And then I go beyond that to the ultimate. Before I would actually go on to the absolute, isn't there some like super additive consequence? I mean, if I have two things that are realities, I mean, I know I always have a super additive consequence. That term supreme ultimate is getting you to think along those lines. That I take the supreme and the ultimate, I put them together as the supreme ultimate, and they have a super additive consequence. You can think of the co-absolute. So it's kind of a bottom-up way of getting to the absolute, without trying to somehow imagine the absolute directly or the co-absolute, sort of right up, imagining up there. He's like, well, I could get up to there if I put the supreme and the ultimate together, and then the super additive consequence boosted me over the boundary. Okay. And, let's just jump ahead one little tad. That next trinity, that next experiential trinity, the absolute trinity, you have the supreme, and God the supreme, and God the ultimate, and the consummator of universe destiny. And the consummator of universe destiny is a co-absolute individual. And if this God the Supreme and God the Ultimate and that Trinity are going to be engaging, they have to be engaging him in a co-absolute way. Well, how do they get to that co-absolute relationship with that being who is just made co-absolute? He didn't transcend the Supreme and the Ultimate to get to that. He was just made co-absolute. Well, they have to somehow put themselves together. Yeah, it's right there. The supreme, the ultimate, and the consummator. So the supreme ultimate gets them into relationship with that co-absolute being of the consummator. Okay. All right. Let's read a little bit about the God the Absolute.
Section 10, God the Absolute. There are many features of the eternal reality of the deity absolute, which cannot be fully explained to the time-space finite mind. But the actualization of God the Absolute would be in consequence of the unification of the second experiential trinity, the Absolute Trinity. This would constitute the experiential realization of absolute divinity, the unification of absolute meanings on absolute levels. But we are not certain regarding the encompassment of all absolute values, since we have at no time been informed that the qualified absolute is the equivalent of the infinite. Super-ultimate destinies are involved in absolute meanings and infinite spirituality, and without both of these unachieved realities, we cannot establish absolute values.
Okay. There's a lot of density to that. If that isn't self-evident. They sort of start off as you might expect. There are many features of the eternal reality, which cannot be fully explained. So that's obvious. They're just trying to remind you that. But notice that they're suggesting there's obviously going to be some parallel. If I have God the Supreme, God the God the Supreme, God the Ultimate, then God the Absolute is going to be have some sort of a parallel relationship. And you can say things like that God the Ultimate would be in consequence of the unification. You have the Absolute Upholder, so that unification is still in play. And now it's not via the Ultimate Trinity that God the Absolute is coming, it's via the Absolute Trinity. Okay, so you have that new sort of substrate that would be behind that. And so all of that, you know, is in parallel, you know, and could be talked about in a very parallel way. They say that this would constitute the experiential realization of absolute divinity. So there you have this realization that you're talking about again, and a unification. See, I mean, they're using all the same sort of words, absolute meanings and on absolute levels. It's like, okay, all right. So they're just saying there's just another notch to it. But then they throw in this real zinger, okay, into this mix. But we are not certain regarding the encompassment of all absolute values, since we have at no time been informed that the qualified absolute is the equivalent of the infinite. Okay. The first thing that should strike you as very curious, you know, we are not certain. You're going, huh? Okay, why would you be not certain, about whether or not the qualified absolute is equivalent to the infinite? You know, I mean, maybe I'm just not getting it here, but it looks like one is absolute and one is infinite. And not only that, it's not just the absolute, it's the qualified absolute. So it's not even, you know, it's a qualified absoluteness. Why would there be any confusion about whether or not those are the same or different? Okay. We can talk about this in more straightforward terms. Okay, the qualified absolute or the deity absolute, that's the individuality name, individuality viewpoint name. What's the unity viewpoint name of the deity absolute? The infinite potential. Oh, well, now when you say it that way, okay, so they're not certain about, they've not been informed that the infinite potential is equivalent to the infinite. Oh, well, that sounds like it's maybe a little bit more potentially confusing. They both have the word infinite in it, you know? And after all, we've been kind of talking about, you know, thinking about an expression like the infinite potential is the infinite made potential. And it's like, well, okay, so, yeah, maybe I see what they're saying. Maybe they're wondering is, well, if I have the infinite, and then the infinite made potential, maybe they're saying, well, maybe the infinite made potential is one side, and just the infinite is the other side. Maybe they're really equivalent. And it's like, okay, so maybe there is something there. Okay, and now look at it in a little different way, because there's another suggestive word in there, encompassment. What is when they say encompassment, what's the word that's in play?
Mind.
Yeah, and the womb, you know, there's a mind womb, but specifically mind. Like when we talked about the encompassment relative to the Supreme, that was the Supreme Mind. And so you have the, think about the parallels. The encompassment of all supreme values is by the Supreme Mind. The encompassment of all absonite values is by the absonite mind. I mean, the ultimate mind, excuse me. The ultimate mind. You know, because, I mean, they've been building this up. They're saying, you know, think in parallels. It's like, oh, because I'm doing it. Okay, so I have the Supreme Mind encompassing supreme values, the ultimate mind encompassing ultimate values. Oh, okay, so I take it up to the next notch. So I have the absolute mind encompassing absolute values. But wait a minute. The absolute mind encompassing absolute values. I thought the expression the absolute mind was about the conjoint actor. You know, the conjoint actor functioning as the absolute mind. And of course, the conjoint actor, that's the person, the personal word. The impersonal word is the infinite spirit, which you can also call the infinite mind, encompassing infinite values. Oh yeah. Well, now I'm right, you know, I'm using the word infinite again. I've got the infinite spirit, the infinite mind, I'm starting to see there is something kind of confusing about this. How does that work? I mean, obviously, though, this absolute mind that we're talking about God the absolute, that has to somehow be different than the absolute mind when you're talking about the conjoint actor, doesn't it? Because if somehow you got all the way to God the absolute and those were one and the same thing, well, then aren't you just totally back to where you started and it all just you know, implodes, you know, back to the I am? So I see what they're getting at. Now, I mean, to talk about this in any greater depth is beyond the scope of this class. It's something that, you know, we can do, you know, when we talk about total deity and, you know, outside of the context of this class. It'll be part of that graduate level seminar that we're thinking about having. But, you know, just staying, you know, with what they have at face value. See, all that is there to be seen, just directly in black and white, if you just, you know, follow the little clues there. Now, so that's what they're getting at, is this whole confusion. That's why they sometimes talk. It's like, well, you know, then there's that God the absolute thing. I guess we ought to say would be. God the absolute would be in kind of, you know, they often speak in a qualified fashion like that, because they're not sure exactly how to think about it, taking it all the way to the end, like we were just talking about there. However, all that said, look at what they say next.
God the absolute is the realization attainment goal of all super absonite beings. But the power and personality potential of the deity absolute transcends our concept, and we hesitate to discuss those realities which are so far removed from experiential actualization.
Okay, but carefully notice the words. Does that sentence start out, God the absolute would be?
Is.
Okay. Not will be or even would be, but is. Okay. All right. So let's just.
Is the goal?
Yeah, but is. Yeah. Not would be the goal if somehow you could actually get God the absolute to, you know, come into existence as a notion that makes sense. You know, whereas I was just trying to think about it and I couldn't seem to quite make sense out of it. I was getting confused. I couldn't quite figure out how it all fits together. Okay. There's two things in play in their statement here. The reason I'm going to show you on the chart why they say is in one place and would be in another. What's the differential that's in play between those two paragraphs? You can see it directly on the chart. Okay. When you're, you know, we've been talking about how we're kind of trying, getting an initial relationship with the Supreme, the Ultimate, the Absolute in this time viewpoint, this sequence, and we're just going from one transcendent step to the next, and we're seeing the sevenfold in that whole process. Okay, we got that whole time viewpoint, and that first paragraph is in that mode. It's like, well, okay, so if we take it to the next notch, it's, you know, it'll be in the next section, but you know, those who have read the book know what's going on here about thinking about God the Absolute. That's where, okay, so we have this creative engine that's driving a process this way around the ellipse, and we're going to get the Supreme and the Ultimate You know, actualizing as we move around like this. Well, look at the absolutes in that mode. Okay, so in other words, and you know, to get the absolute, we have to bring the three absolutes together. We have to bring the universal absolute around in association with the unqualified absolute, and through the Paradise Trinity around here to the deity absolute. And then we're thinking that those three come together as the absolute and personalize as God the absolute. But like we were just talking about, when you know, it's like, well, okay, that's all fine. But then when I start to think about some of the details, like absolute mind and how does that fit, and I get confused, and okay, and that's what we were just talking about. But they know this picture, okay? And so in spite of the fact that just thinking in that individuality viewpoint, putting those three absolutes together into the absolute, you know, that there's some confusion there. You know, this is the would-be picture. There's another spot right there. The absolute just is right there. Okay? As you start filling in the blanks, the seven blanks around the unity circuit, okay, there's a blank where the absolute just is right there. You know, that's not somehow, you know, me visualizing this chart collapsing and these three boxes coming together or something like that. Like we were saying, visualizing and going from this state to transcending the grand universe. It's like, well, maybe this block and this block come together as one block. Remember how we talked about that? You know, that's that first paragraph. The second paragraph is, no, don't do any sort of modification of this. Just look at it as it is, right here, right now. There is the absolute. That is not somehow those three boxes collapse together. It is right there. Just like the ultimate is right there. And the supreme is right there. Okay?
And that's the experiential body.
That's the unity circuit. See, that's the unity circuit. From the unity viewpoint, it is. From a time viewpoint, well, it would be or could be or you know, should be or maybe will be or, okay. But, you know, that's that individuality circuit, see, in the individuality viewpoint, the bottom-up viewpoint. This is the unity circuit. And the absolute just is right there, okay. It is the realization goal of all super-absonite beings. Super-absonite beings. Well, wait a minute. Let's see. I know the book pretty well. Like, I remember the personalities of the Grand Universe section, and they're talking about transcendentalers and, you know, the architects and masters of the universe and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, I know those are absonite beings. Super-absonite beings? Is there an example? Is there someone I know who's a super-absonite being who would have a realization attainment goal of God the Absolute, just like I have a realization attainment goal of God the Supreme? Yeah, I mentioned one of them. Yeah, he's a co-absolute being. He's a super-absonite being. For him, you know, God is, his mother is God the Absolute as God the Mother. Okay, is there a consummator of universe destiny, or is he just a figment of wishful thinking that eternity can somehow be achieved? No, there is a consummator of universe destiny. There is a super absonite being. And if there is such a being, he has to be in a womb. There has to be a mother. Not would be, could be, should be, maybe. There has to be a mother. Yeah, it is. It's right there. Okay, God the Absolute is an antecedent following. And you know, there is God the Absolute, you know, right now. Okay, so just see and notice, you know, we had power, personality, and then we had personality, power. And now it's like, well, you know, we want both those two words and they won't you still be thinking of some kind of a parallel, but we probably shouldn't stick them together in either order. So we'll just say power and personality. See? But they're telling you that there is a fact of God the As, and there is a parallel that you can at least begin to, you know, there's going to be, you know, a synthesis and a unification going on at that absolute level too, in parallel to the ones of the absolute and the finite. Okay.
Hesitation had to do with experiential. Right.
Have they experienced the absolute? No. You know, all they can, you know, they, some of these beings have some experience with the supreme ultimate aspects of reality, and hence, you know, a little glimmer of the co-absolute and whatnot, but the absolute, no.
What beings?
Some of the very high beings, you know. I mean, like the ones that she just brought up, the seven master spirits. You know, read that, you know, you read that part that you know, you don't have to read it right now, but, you know, if you read that you know, that area where she was just talking, they use supreme ultimate hyphenated together, as, you know, I'm talking about the seven master spirits.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's beings that, you know, have some little more direct inkling about co-absolute, supreme ultimate and stuff. But
even in God the Ultimate, they were possibly supreme ultimate endowments.
Right, see, and that's you know, you're trying to push the individuality circuit all the way, and it's like, well, okay, you know, you got supreme and I've got ultimate, I guess I have supreme ultimate, and but, you know, but I'm not really going to say co-absolute. I'm just going to say supreme ultimate, because I'm really just trying to project, you know. Okay. And then just one other little thing, that projection. See? Super ultimate destiny. So you go back to the previous, I skipped over this because I wanted to have that other in play. Super ultimate destinies are involved in absolute meanings and infinite spirituality. And without both of these unachieved realities, we cannot establish absolute values. You know, so that whole bit about the absolute mind encompassing absolute values, and how when we try to think about that, it's like, oh yeah, well, the absolute mind, that's the conjoint actor, and then there's the infinite spirit. Infinite spirituality. See, when you're taking this individuality viewpoint and you're trying to push it, you know, the one thing that you do understand is what already is and you have some experience with, the three paradise deities. You have some experience with the infinite spirit, you know, if you're one of these beings. You know, many times have I stood in the very presence of the infinite spirit, okay? You have some understanding about this. And so you have some notion about absolute meanings and absolute values, and how that's very intimately tied to infinite spirituality, the infinite spirit. And so you're going, okay, but if I take the individuality thing all the way to God, that God, and the absolute mind of that, it's like, well, how is that connected to infinite spirituality? I can't, you know, it's not like the other side of it is the infinite spirit. That's what's in play. So there. That's, you know, I wanted to really stress this, because there's many, many times throughout the book when they express this uncertainty about God the Absolute. You know, and it's predicated on two things. You know, this attempt to extrapolate, like we're doing here in the foreword, combined with what you do have direct experience of, those existential deities, and they're not quite sure how you put the two together into some cohesive picture. Okay. There seems to be kind of a point at which, you know, it breaks down. And so they just never will speak definitively because of that breakdown and being able to put those pieces together. But even though, you know, even here and even in the midst of that, God the Absolute is. So you notice that. Because, you know, just in the same way that they did it, you and I can do it. You and I can make this chart. And you and I can look at this chart and notice that the absolute is right there. You know, I'm not imagining it somehow, you know, condensing out of this chart. It just is right there. And they can, so conceptually at least, they can see the same thing. That's what they're getting at.
When you say that something is the goal, it also could be understood to mean that it doesn't yet exist. The creation of it is the goal. Or it could be understood to say that these super absonite beings, it's their goal to obtain this God, the Absolute, which exists already.
Yeah, see, that the key, you know, I mean, that's why I brought, you know, emphasized that. I mean, notice, you know, it doesn't say God the Absolute is the realization, attainment, goal of you in eternity. You know, it's not taking you.
No, it's
taking some sort of super absent beings.
But attaining God's Absolute is their goal. And so, but the point I want to make is that this sentence could be understood to mean that God the Absolute exists and that is their goal, or attaining this goal will create God the Absolute.
And what do we call those two different sentences? We call one of them the individuality viewpoint and one the unity viewpoint. And what if we, you know, what, you know, take this, you know, forget about God the Absolute, just take it back down to God the Supreme. Okay? And that whole antecedent following thing. See, the point is that it's both. It's both. Because the focalization, the mother, is coming down from above. You can't have an absolute upholder. Well, before I do that, I said I wasn't going to do that. You can't have a finite upholder if there isn't a supreme one above that finite upholder. In the same way, there has to be an absolute one. And then actually, down in the co-absolute, there's an absolute upholder. You know, or another way of saying it, if there is a being that is fundamentally transcendent of the absonite, you know, he can't just float on nothing and eventually he will somehow get to something that will be there when he gets there. He has to be standing on something right now. And that what he's standing on is the absolute upholder. And that absolute upholder, you know, you can understand in the same way that you can think of the supreme being and you bring it down to the finite and you have the universal mother and the almighty supreme, you got the same thing up there. You have to have an absolute one and you bring it down into, you know, down into the co-absolute, you know, and there has to be a mother there that, you know, to stand on, that's actually in the co-absolute, not encompassing it, not above it, as God the Absolute, as the Absolute One. So that's why I'm saying it definitively. It's just because we're attempting to see this in this full extrapolated mode, where the more you can understand about how God the Supreme sets up, the more it has to be the way God the Absolute is set up, because they're all in parallel.
Is it the same with the Supreme? The Supreme already exists. But just because of our bottom-up viewpoint, it doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, if that wasn't the case, Majestan wouldn't exist. Because Majestan was created by the Supreme Being. And so if Supreme Being is just something that's going to be there when I finally get to my destiny point, then where did the Majestan come from? No. See, there's this antecedent following. You have to allow it, the bidirectional, or it can't be understood. And that's why, I emphasized that when they said that. If you're going to understand any of this stuff, you have to let go of just thinking in the time viewpoint, the bottom-up viewpoint. It's not understandable in a purely bottom-up viewpoint. You'll fundamentally reach something and say, well, that's illogical, and if they say that exists, then the book is illogical. It's a bunch of garbage. I mean, you've got to think about it both ways, no matter how difficult that is. There has to be already be an absonite for there to be a finite. And like you said, let your adjuster reassure you about this fact. You know, allow that adjustment in your mind. Let the adjuster make that adjustment in your mind. It's like, well, I don't think I can believe that there's some antecedent. I just don't think I can believe that there's something that came down from the infinite level down to me. And the adjuster says, well, where do you think I came from? Yeah. I'm a fragment of the infinite upholder. That would be on the infinite level. How did I get to you? I came down through the absolute level and then down through the absentite level, you know, and down to be within you in the finite domain. I know of that which I speak. Listen to me. There is that up there right now. The infinite is not just some, or the absolute is not just something that's going to be there eventually when everything gets there. It's already there. I came from there.
Yeah. He's already a witness to it.
Right. So, you know, when you brought up the adjuster, you know, think again about that spot in the book where they tell you, you know, if you're really going to be able to recognize this for the revelation that it is, you have to allow that adjuster voice some credence in your consciousness. You have to allow the top down and not just the bottom up. That's what they're getting at. And again, you know, like I was saying earlier, if you can begin to really feel comfortable with that, that's just a natural, self-evident aspect of your consciousness, behold, all things are becoming new. I mean, again, it's just going to completely transforms everything. You know, if you don't see yourself as this tiny little cork bobbing towards an unknown future. No, you know, the future has come down to meet you. Listen to it. You know, how is it could have a plan for you if the future hasn't come into existence yet? Well, how in the heck, you know, plan? I mean, so in other words, it's going to force me into some, you know, regimen, you know, and I just got to blindly follow this. No, it sees the end from the beginning. It knows the perfect plan because it comes from the eternal actualization of that. It knows you as an eternaliter. And your immediate goal today is to live today as if eternity is already present. Because guess what? It is. It is in your mind right now. Don't live with wishful thinking that maybe that will be one day. No, it is right now, and it's living within your mind. There's no gap to bridge. It's already been bridged. And so, see that, you know, to, again, you know,
We participate rather than we, if the world will fall apart unless we do something. It won't.
No. It's
but we can participate.
It's infinitely, absolutely, absolutely, and finitely upheld. It can't fall. Okay. I hope you don't mind me kind of, you know, injecting some of this passion into this conversation tonight, so it isn't so boilerplate, you know. I want you to see, you know, that don't let the forward be such a boilerplate, you know, like it's tended to be. You know, I mean, begin to make it come alive a little bit, and the moment you make it come alive, you want to speak passionately like I just did. You know the truth that it's expressing. It's a truth that's so transcendent, you know, of the shopping mall yesterday. Okay, that stuff just disappears, you know, and you really can begin to live your life with a peace that passes all understanding, like Jesus told us to do. You know,
some people even shopping malls are rich.
you know what I mean.
About Magistan, is that paradise of reflectivity?
You're right. That's, you know, he's one of those source center facts, you know, he's the source center for universe reflectivity. He's a source center fact, not a center source. In other words, he's father-like, not mother-like. Okay, so if he's, what was that? Yeah, I mean, he's center first and source added to that. A center for reflectivity and then the source of reflectivity, you know, added on that. He's father-like. Well, if he's a child, if he's a father-like child, he has to come from a father-like parent. He has to come from a he. He has to come from the supreme being as a he, not as a she or an it. He's not going to come out of the universal mother, you know, or the almighty supreme and be that. Yeah. He has to come from an absentite he, the supreme being, in order to be the he that he is, you know, the source center that he is. That's just another one of those little, you know, just put it all together logically, you know, and then, you know, it should be self-evident that the supreme, you know, how the supreme being fits into the picture. The supreme being is not somewhere down here in the finite, you know. He doesn't have a finite address. He's an absentite individual. He only has an absentite address. And then if you can, and there actually is that absentite address. It's not a future address. There is an absentite address where the supreme being is standing right now. Only that now is in a super time now. Okay? Yeah, that's what you're bringing up. All right. Well, we'll get into the three absolutes next time. And you'll see that the little preface that they do here next time, depending if it went fast tonight, I was going to go ahead and we were going to do the preface. Yeah, I didn't think it would, but you'll see before we actually get to 1, 2, 3, the three absolutes, there's this little preface in this next section that is kind of brings what we've just read in these four sections together a little bit in a new way. We'll have a lot of fun. Wait till you see, you know, the mastery of the construct of these next few paragraphs. They're really fun. So. The boilerplate will vanish next time, too. That was the point of me commenting about what's the cool stuff that's coming up in that preface. Because that sounds like a kind of a dead title, the three absolutes. Okay, 1, 2, 3, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Yeah. No, you'll see just how rich it is right from the beginning. So let's take a moment here.